Chapter 18. Death Adder Quest. For me, the disadvantages of not having family living in Australia were more than outweighed by the advantages. My parents had chosen to live and work overseas, and when I visited them, I inevitably became involved in innumerable unexpected and enriching cross-cultural experiences. To visit either of them meant taking a plane ride to another country every 3 months or so, for many years. These trips were mostly to visit my mother in New Guinea, and less often to visit my father and his second wife in Kenya. The May holidays of 1967 loomed. As always, I was keen to escape Sydney, and my predictable art student routine, to head north for a few weeks of fun in the New Guinea highlands. This time I flew into Goroka, which was now the headquarters of my mother's wool project. When I visited last, I'd been part of the wool project uplift from Kundiawa, and 3 months on, the project had settled into the new facility at the Goroka showgrounds, on the southern side of the airstrip, not far from my mother's house. Goroka was, and remains, the administrative center of the Eastern Highlands province. It was a small town, so it didn't take me long to figure out the lay of the land. Luckily, I had access to a set of very fancy wheels, my mother's precious Karmann Gear 1500S, which was available whenever I wanted to cruise around town, or visit friends. I also made new friends. Eddie Collins, and his cousin Danny Lay Jr., were in business together, running the numerous Collins and Lay enterprises that included trade stores and plantations throughout the highlands. Team Collins and Lay were at the center of things in Goroka, with their locus of operations situated in the middle of town. Their huge building was always a hive of activity, with their trucks arriving from and departing to small and large townships scattered the length of the unsealed Highlands Highway, which, at that time, ran from Mount Hagen in the west to the busy port town of Lay. Collins and Lay moved all kinds of freight, including coffee, fuel, timber, sweet potato, frozen meat, tinned bully beef and rice. When I went to town, I'd sometimes visit their office, a short 3-minute drive from my mother's house. These men were good company. However, I had a thinly disguised ulterior motive for visiting. I was suffering from a serious crush on Danny's younger brother. It went no further than a crush, because we didn't mix socially. Throughout New Guinea there seemed to be an invisible, though palpable line of demarcation between the commercial traders and government employees. My mother belonged to the latter group, often disrespectfully referred to as do-gooders because she and her fellow government co-workers were engaged in activities that weren't primarily profit-driven. It was the likes of Eddie Collins and Danny Lay, their male relatives and others, who, keen to make money in this unpredictable environment, carried the massive financial investment in both plant and labor necessary to make it happen. To keep me out of trouble for the duration of my stay, my mother had organized a clerical job for me at the district office. I was given a stack of large census books, containing information collected by patrol officers working on outstations in the Eastern Highlands District. One of their jobs was to conduct a census in each village under their administrative jurisdiction. I recall, my job was to update the records by carefully reading through the census sheets that listed every villager in each village, and put a line through the names of those who had died, their death recorded at the bottom of the page. It was a mind-numbingly boring job, but it did the trick, keeping me well away from anyone who could have been considered a bad influence. Joy Higgins was another new friend. A beautiful and devout siren of indeterminate age, who worked at the Goroka courthouse. She was slender and evenly tanned, spending her lunch hour, bikini-clad in her back garden, topping up her tan. To avoid prying eyes, she'd lie on a towel in a coffin-shaped screened area, supported by wooden stakes. Concealed in this way, she could sidestep the oft-spoken directive for white women, not to expose too much skin. As large expanses of European skin were considered a turn-on for local men. As well as an even suntan, Joy's other obsession was Fred Parker, a patrol officer based in Kundiawa, who collected both venomous and non-venomous snakes. Joy wholeheartedly assisted him to source additional snakes for his collection, even though she admitted she was terrified of them. I remember being invited to join her on a snake collecting adventure early one sunny Saturday morning. Joy had organized a ride for us in a semi-trailer that was going east, along the Highlands Highway. An hour or so into the trip, we caught sight of a solitary man, standing by the side of the road clutching a heshing sack. When we reached him, the driver slowed the truck to a stop. Joy then clambered out of the cabin to inspect the snakes and pay the man what he was owed. After taking charge of the grubby heshing sack, she placed it at our feet, on the passenger side of the cabin. It was too much for me, and, as I recall, I had my knees up under my chin, until we reached the next roadside settlement. Here, we stopped and thanked the driver, before climbing down with Joy's precious cargo, a sack full of angry snakes. After waving the truck goodbye, we crossed the highway, to stand by the side of the road, like a couple of waifs, waiting to hitch a ride back to Goroka. After a short wait, we flagged down an approaching truck that had room in the cabin for both of us, as well as the snakes. We arrived back in Goroka an hour or so later, safe and sound. I was so relieved to leave the heshing sack and its contents in Joy's capable hands, and skedaddle on home. Yet another new friend was Meg Taylor. Like me, she too was home on holidays. She was studying law at Melbourne University. Her family was New Guinea royalty. In 1933, her father, Australian Kiap Jim Taylor, along with brothers Dan and Mick Lay, and surveyor Ken Spinks, walked into the Wagi Valley, the first Europeans to do so. Keen to explore further, in 1938 and 39, Taylor led the Hagen Sepik patrol with John Black. The purpose of these first contact patrols was to make contact with the Highland tribes people, who until then had lived their lives shut away from the outside world. In 1939, whilst Taylor was once again patrolling in the Wagi Valley, leader of the Bimane clan at Karawilmasipinjinga promised Taylor his daughter, Yerima Munumps, hand in marriage. 10 years later, he returned to marry her. After the couple married, they spent time mining for gold at Pugra, and later settled on land west of Goroka where they planted coffee. Jim Taylor said of his wife, "She embodies everything I love about this country, Papua New Guinea." Meg was the eldest of the Taylors' three children. One weekend she invited me to visit their farm to meet her parents. It was a most interesting experience because in New Guinea in the late 1960s, a white man with a native wife and mixed-race children usually kept it very quiet. Whereas the Taylors were very open and very public, with Meg's mother playing an important part in the management of their farm. Their approach was the precursor of things to come. Over time, the prevailing colonial attitude of natives being considered lesser than whites would gradually dissipate, particularly after 1975, when Papua New Guinea was granted independence from Australia. During my visit to the Taylor's farm, we spoke Tok Pisin, the lingua franca of New Guinea. As we were chatting, Meg's mother was kind enough to correct my clunky sentence construction. My feeble excuse for this shortcoming was lack of practice, as I was now spending most of my time in Australia. I'd really enjoyed my visit to the Taylor's farm, but sadly my holiday time was running out. During my two-week stay, I'd made myself useful, doing a mind-numbingly boring clerical job at district office, attempting to progress my crush with no success, been taken on a snake-collecting adventure, and had briefly rubbed shoulders with Papua New Guinea royalty. But now it was time to collect myself and return to Australia for my second term of art studies at the Randwick Technical College. I was comforted in the knowledge that I would be back again in 3 months for the August holidays and yet another round of Highland hijinks. On reflection, Joy Higgins. All these years on, I remain mystified by Joy's willingness to enthusiastically participate in her boyfriend's unusually dangerous hobby. Nevertheless, I was filled with admiration for her determination to play an indispensable role in his life. She was willing to hitch her wagon to a man who was seen as different but nonetheless admired by many, because he was doing something with his downtime, instead of falling into the alcohol consumption trap, which was, and probably still is, the preferred recreational pastime for those living in New Guinea. Over the years, I have occasionally reflected on Joy's modus operandi in intimate relationships and compared it to my own. In my case, I haven't been particularly interested in my partner's profession or hobbies, possibly because I have always been fully focused on my own all-consuming art career. Joy was older, maybe explaining her enthusiastic approach to collecting snakes to make herself indispensable, or maybe she was seeking equality. Or maybe she was striving to overcome her fear. Or maybe she was modeling the perfect, supportive, uncomplaining helpmeet. Or maybe she enjoyed the excitement and adventure that came with the relationship. Or maybe it was good sex. To this day, I remain perplexed. Meg Taylor. I've not seen Meg since the May holidays of 1967, as our lives and studies were concentrated in different Australian cities. Meg was studying law in Melbourne, and I was studying art in Sydney. Facts. Goroka. Goroka was, and is, the administrative headquarters of the Eastern Highlands Province. The town is situated on the Highlands Highway at 1600 metres or 5200 feet above sea level. The town attracts tourists, both local and international, who flock to the world-famous biennial Goroka Show, that began in 1957. The province is one of the major coffee-producing regions of the country. The Highlands Highway. The Highlands Highway, sometimes known as the O'Cook Highway, is the mainland highway in Papua New Guinea. It connects several major cities, and is vital for the movement of people and goods, between the populous Highlands region and the coast. Meg Taylor. Meg's parents, Yerima Manamp and Jim Taylor, gave her an amazing cross-cultural upbringing. This rich social and linguistic experience, coupled with the intellectual prowess and legal expertise that came from her legal studies, enabled her to bring a balanced approach to policy making, whilst she held a number of important positions on behalf of her country and its people, both at home and overseas. In 1988, 50 years after her father, explorer Jim Taylor's epic 1938 patrol into the then unexplored New Guinea Highlands, Meg retraced his footsteps, and met with people who remembered his patrol arriving in their villages, 50 years earlier. Meg combined her own observations, together with excerpts from her father's journal, in her book, In My Father's Footsteps. Her book provides a personal and poetic narrative about an extraordinary meeting of cultures. In 2002, Meg Taylor was made a Dame Commander of the Order of the British Empire.